It's Saturday, October 29th, 2011. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KOSP Public Radio. We are doing geek news this whole hour of Geek Speak. And it's time now, of course, for my favorite program, Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Today we'll be speaking with Mike Rotkin, former mayor of Santa Cruz, all about desalination. And wait a second, this seems like exactly the same show we did last week. Ben, what's the date today?
Did you just said it was 29th, right?
October 29th. Okay, it's a week later. But I wanted to bring up last week's
October
show.
29th plus 7 is October 36th.
Okay. It's October 36th. Wait a second.
November 5th.
November 5th, 2011. Last week, we talked with Mike Rotkin about desalination. And I just wanted to mention that we didn't really cover both sides of the argument, if you will. I took the stance that Mike had been studying the project for years. I knew him well. And we went ahead and really covered it from his perspective, which was a former anti-desalination to switch to a desalination advocate to some degree. And that's what the show is about. But we did get an email from Rick, one of our listeners, and he said, if you want to know about the alternatives, go to desalinatealternatives.org. Want to mention that on the show since we didn't cover it as directly as possible. I think that Mike's probably, in my personal opinion, I think Mike Rotkin's perspective that we need a desalination plant in Santa Cruz is, I agree with it. But at the same time, there are alternatives. So go ahead, and if you want to learn more about that, desalinatealternatives.org. All right, now on to this week's show. In the air with me, I have geek Miles Elam. He's a political junkie and programmer. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
We also have Mr. Ben Jaffe, a freelance media guy and sometimes Stanford instructor.
Hey.
Hey, are you still homeless?
Kind of.
Okay, good. Good to know. We also have Katie Dutcher, linguistics and religious studies major from Pomona College. Currently spends your time fighting with Adobe Acrobat, right?
Pretty much, exactly.
I'm so sorry.
I know.
I try not to launch that application.
You know, before this job, I was like mildly interested in Google, you know, trying to like destroy Adobe. I was like, okay, that's cool. And now I'm rooting for it.
Somebody has to destroy Adobe.
I just cannot wait for it to happen.
Okay. You could just use, you know, Google Docs.
Oh, I do.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
Well, let's go on to the geek news. Miles, will you please tell me what's going on in the math music world?
No, that's going to be later in the mid-show.
Oh, okay.
You should stay tuned. We've got a great geek bit today.
About music.
About music. Which is very close to mathematics, so it totally fits in the geek
Absolutely.
Speak. Little do people know. But what I'm going to talk about is programming, or specifically algorithms, so I guess it's closer to a general mathematics, or applied mathematics, to speed up MRI scans. If any of you out there have ever had an MRI taken of you, you know you're in that tube for a very long time listening to
Yeah, I kind of like it.
That's how Ben sleeps every night.
Right?
I own my own MRI scanner.
And we have one in the KSP office, in case you didn't hear it. We just turned that on just for the...
It wasn't a voice effect.
That's right. Like the third class cabins by the engines of the Titanic, you know? Like...
So instead of having to spend, say, 45 minutes in one of these machines, which for people who are claustrophobic can be more traumatic than a disease sometimes. I'm sure some of you can attest to this. They're reducing that time from 45 minutes to 15 minutes.
Nice. With the maths?
Yeah, just by making the analysis algorithm that much faster.
Does that mean less scanning of getting less slices, I would assume?
Because
you still have to take the pictures.
Yes, you still have to take the pictures, but analysis of those images so that you have the data to then present to the screen is different.
Very cool. All right, thanks. MRI is getting better. Where's the study?
The MRI is done exactly the same way. It's just that...
But it's still a closed MRI, right? Like, not an open one? So they're not reducing the amount, you know, the fact that you're still, like, in the tunnel.
Right. Right. You're still in the tunnel.
Right.
Just for less amount of time. This is torture, every second of it. Well, it's only 15 minutes.
And so you have... The MIT's Research Laboratory of Electronics to thank for this.
Thank you very much. And I'm assuming this is not in production, but it's moving that direction.
No, I want to say it's more than a proof of concept because this is a working algorithm. They've actually tried it out. So it's not like many of the other things we can talk about, where there's this new technology that is in the lab and they've kind of reproduced it, or it's temporary. No, this is real. This is going to find itself into the general populace.
All right. Well,
soon.
Thanks, MIT, for making those faster. Hey, Ben.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
So I want to talk about Columbia University. This professor, Sapolks Marka.
Good said.
I'm sorry, what?
I'm not going to try again. Go to geekspeak.org and take a look at the article yourself. Miles is looking at it. Maybe he'll take a shot. I don't know. But anyway.
It's a Slavic name. Just, it's acceptable.
I totally did it right.
What's the first name?
S-Z-A-P-B-O-L-C-S.
Go on with the story. What's going on in Columbia?
Anyone want to like email us the phonetic pronunciation?
No, just accept that we are culturally illiterate and let's move on.
That was the story. So, we'll move on. he's been doing some really great research at Columbia University, and he's shown, I mean, we have this problem with mosquitoes, right? Keeping mosquitoes away from people. For one, because they're annoying, and for the second reason, because they carry malaria and things like that.
And that's other diseases, yes.
That's no good, yeah. So, we have all of these ways of keeping them away. We have sprays we can put on ourselves, and we also, of course, have mosquito nets, which work really well. Well, this guy's research has actually shown that it's a little bit scant on details, but apparently just light, like creating a barrier of light, will actually stop mosquitoes and other such insects from passing it. So I assume it's just like...
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, tell this
to the moths.
Tell this to the what?
The moths.
Moths?
That sit there and bounce themselves against lights. So there's a... wait a second. How much power does this beam of light have?
You see, those are the details I really want that I was looking... Oh, my computer broke last night, so I'm on... you want to explain what I'm on? It's a Dell Mini 9. If anyone else has a Dell Mini 9...
He's on a hackathon.
And they call it a Dell Mini 9 because the screen actually doesn't reach 9 inches. It's actually 8.9 inches.
So it's Mini 9.
Yeah, they're rounding up
as 9 approaches...
Nine.
Or 9 doesn't approach 9.
What?
Nine, so wait a second.
Okay.
You're saying that a beam of light will stop insects.
Yes, and so if you take this beam of light and you spread it out and you make it so it encloses a person or encloses even a larger object, like, say, a building or whatever, then you can actually keep mosquitoes away. Because mosquitoes will go, they'll get to the beam of light, and they won't pass it, or at least most won't.
Okay. I'm trying to imagine what this beam of light... Let's say it's like... in the sense that there's a very... strict definition between the darkness this mosquito would be in and the bright space, mm-hmm. that it would fly into it and go, and turn around.
It's probably something...
Rather than like just a light bulb that it might fly near because it would never have that contrast.
It's like probably a laser, or like if you take a laser and you extrude it into a plane.
What you do is you take a laser that's 300 milliwatts.
You put it on the head of a shark.
Oh my gosh.
And then you draw a chair on the moon.
And
with
then
it.
$1 million. Nice.
Good references. All right. Mosquitoes can get vaporized by high energy beams.
Yes.
Okay.
They were using.
Is that something we didn't already
know? Not vaporized.
They just turn around. But remember the other story about the laser beam that like tracks
the lasers where they would actually just like get the mosquitoes out of the air that way. I don't know. I mean,
hope the sound effect does well enough on radio. You need the finger thing to show the mosquitoes exploding.
Yeah, exactly. Nice.
Okay.
I guess that wouldn't translate well. But I don't know.
I never know.
Everybody's here.
I thought that was a camera over there.
The power of radio, where you can see exactly what we describe.
It's called imagination, Miles. But anyway, I don't know. I feel bad for the mosquitoes. I feel good about this for the mosquitoes.
Because they don't die.
Yeah, you're not killing mosquitoes. I mean, even if they have malaria, I don't know. I don't know that it affects mosquitoes in the same way.
I imagine these little devices that like you turn on and push down, you know, putting around your perimeter of the space, and it just has laser beams that fly in the air. I mean, that would be just kind of cool anyway.
They were using lasers, but now they're using this newer rev of the technology. They're using just light, not laser light, because that can be dangerous in certain situations.
I would love to say that we're going to discuss this more so that everyone understands it. But instead of doing that, if you don't understand at this point, let's go look at the story, because I bet they have pictures and all that stuff. Right?
Uh-huh.
You can learn this at geekspeak.org. Miles, we'll get to you, Katie, pretty soon. But Miles, go ahead.
One of the issues with nuclear power plants is that they have to be located next to large bodies of water.
For cooling.
For cooling. Or technically they don't, but at the same time, like for example, when Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant was being set up, the local municipality was saying, no, we're not going to let you use our municipal water for this purpose. And so they had to set up a desalinization plant and set up on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the issues with that, or what people worry about, it actually has been an issue in the past with some leaks, and not to mention the most recent leak in Japan's Fukushima plant, is how do you get the radioactive materials out of the water? Well, some researchers at Australia's Queensland University of Technology have found a possible solution to this, and that is using a titanate nanofiber. So think of nanofibers, but instead of like a carbon nanofiber or something that's like that, you have something that's based upon titanium. And what that will do is any, for example, a cesium ion, so radioactive cesium as it goes through, are trapped through the structural change of going through these fine nanotubes and fibers. And so we'll be attracted to it. And then if you add silver oxide nanocrystals to that mixture, it will actually be able to bind and capture and immobilize those radioactive
stuff that got
stuff,
caught.
Yeah.
That got
also, like,
down.
Sorry, the silver is to capture and immobilize radioactive iodine.
So you basically add a filter to the system that takes out these heavy particles.
Right. And so it will be bundled up in all of these, and they will settle because they are more dense than water. And so you can actually concentrate them together for waste disposal and clean out the water.
I didn't know that this was... I mean, I guess for catastrophic events, this is necessary. But in general... general nuclear power plant systems, this isn't necessary. Because,
on
I mean,
the
they've
contrary,
been, they've been cleaning, like, Diablo's water output is less radioactive than its input.
Right.
Right, so
but that's
they've
for
already
normal,
been filtering to some degree. That's for normal operations.
That's for normal operation when it's going through it, and it's also in the case of if there's, yeah, if there's some abnormal, if there's a leak somewhere, how do you clean up that water? It's,
right.
It's, if it's in the primary loop, that's a real problem. You have, like, a little drip. You can't just go over and mop it up.
Right.
So this is one of those... not necessarily a solution, but at least it's one way of approaching the problem, mm-hmm. as opposed to just going,
well, it's too bad.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
It means that you save a whole lot of money when you're trying to do the cleanup, and it ends up being a lot safer for people when they're doing that process.
Katie, hi. Welcome. Thanks for
Hello.
Joining us. Hi.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier a kind of geeky story that you posted recently on your Facebook. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah. You know, I totally hadn't anticipated coming onto this show. You know, Carrie and I were here to just, like, hang out, but then I made what might have been the mistake of mentioning.
You became geeky.
Yeah.
Is the problem.
I showed my geekiness. Mm-hmm. That was the mistake for sure. But basically, and this probably would have been a better story to run last week because now sort of the date has already passed. But for those of you who are interested in what happened a couple days ago, the date, November 2nd, 2011, was actually what this one mathematician has described as a one-of-a-kind palindrome date of this century. So in this century of, you know, 2000, especially in the years where all the numbers are numbers like zeros, ones, and twos,
mm-hmm.
There are basically 4 8-digit palindrome dates.
And what we're talking about is the 11th, so 1-1, the second 11th, the 11th, November 2nd, you would write that
as 11-02-20-11.
All right, so palindrome, totally reversible.
Yeah, it's an 8-digit palindrome, looks exactly the same.
And how many times did that happen in the century?
Well, so it's happened twice this year. The first one was January 10th, because it was 1-10, or no, I'm sorry, it was 1-10-2-20-11.
Okay.
And then the other ones, and keep in mind, this is in, you know, our world where we use the month, day, year format.
Yeah, and see, I don't even use that format. Well, I always do the year first.
Well, so you have your own palindrome dates.
I do.
So the rest of the world, you know, that uses the day, month, year format, they have palindrome dates, and their next two will actually. So we have to wait here in the United States. We have to wait another, I think, 10 years in 2021 before mm-hmm. our next dates will come. But the rest of the world gets to do these dates again next year.
Nice.
So there's 4 dates. These, like, 4 special palindrome dates this century.
Why is this one the important one?
Well, Lyle, if you're interested. Let's see. First, the number 11022011 equals 7 times 7, times 11 times 11 times 11 times 13 times 13. So it's the product of 7 squared, 11 cubed, and 13 squared, which means that
some
it
primes.
Is they are 3 consecutive primes.
Oh, wait.
It gets better. So this number, which is, I don't even know if I could say that in terms of, I think it's 11,022,011 is how you would say that in like normal notation. It is divisible by the product of the squares of 3 consecutive prime numbers.
You just said that.
I know, right? Math majors, where are you at? Furthermore, it is also divisible by the cube of the middle prime weight of the 3 consecutive primes.
Okay.
So interestingly,
because those primes are in numerical order.
So, right. Wait, hang on. Got it. So when you write it, when you write it as 7 squared times 11 cubed times 13 squared, and you look at those subscripts or the superscripts, you know, the 2, the 3, yeah. and the 2, that's also a palindrome, 2, 3, 2.
What more can you want in life?
You know, if you're especially if
wait,
you're
this thing already
I'm
happened.
Sure.
It's so depressing.
I know. That's
see, if we just gone with it being the October 29th show, like I introduced, then we would have been set.
I know, right?
A few days from
and
now,
and then everyone would be looking forward.
All right, so
to
just turn
day.
Back your time
because that's frame. How time works. So, you know, you just you fly over the international dateline, and hey, it's
just
yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Actually,
man.
Time can go in could possibly go in both directions. We just wouldn't be able to notice it.
So far.
Speaking of turning back, by the way. Fall back tomorrow morning, daylight savings.
Thank you.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Or a week from tomorrow, depending
right.
on what date is today.
Clearly, right, we're at the okay. October 29th show. Oh, and in a week, it's bank transfer day, by the way, the 5th of November.
What is bank transfer day?
Bank
mean?
Transfer day. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's an English thing, right?
Well, so that remember the 5th Guy Fawkes day, whatever.
Sure.
Oh, wait, it's not in 1 week, it's today.
Oh, it is.
November 5th.
Oh, look at that.
It's not October 29th.
Remember,
today.
The 5th of November. No, but today is when...
All these references to you... things that we're not giving any context to.
In just a minute, we'll be starting Geek Speak. Okay, fall back tomorrow.
Fall back tomorrow morning.
All right.
And that means fall back into bed.
You get another hour.
And get up an hour later.
All right. Do you remember that story where someone lost an hour of their time, their day, and he called the local papers and the whole deal, and turns out it was just... The clocks changed automatically on him.
He was like looking for it.
Yeah.
He's like, what happened?
All right.
Oh my God.
Who's up for next news story? That's you, Ben.
Yeah. I got
Thank
a
you,
news
Katie.
Story
awesome.
About losing an hour of your day. Actually, I
wish that was happening right now.
I have a problem. Unlike most people, games are not compelling to me at all. Almost no games at all. The one that is Angry Birds. And as a result, I hate that game so much.
Because it takes your time away.
It draws you in.
It takes my time away. Turns out, they just passed the 500 million mark for their game download. 500 million people. So they just
That's
need...
a lot.
Is this Angry Birds or Angry Birds Rio?
This is, I think, the Angry Birds game franchise or whatnot.
Several, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's...
500 million. That's a lot.
Actually, it doesn't specify. So it might just be... It might
the
just
Angry Birds
be
franchise.
The Angry Birds. Yeah, I think it's the Angry Birds franchise. But that is phenomenal.
This,
I mean...
This is like the Pink Flamingo
people.
The Pink Flamingo scenario. People will not pay for fine art. But millions have purchased those Pink Flamingos you put as a lawn ornament. You put on your lawn as an ornament. Mm-hmm. It's like you cannot underestimate.
It's really funny. I know a photographer whose fine art book is about the Pink Flamingos.
Anyway, it's terrifying. I should actually, in the defense of Angry Birds, it's a fantastic game. It's really, 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 really well done. So, yeah, I like it. And I also hate it at the same time.
So,
but
when
I mean,
you say
that,
don't play
other
games, you mean other computer games. You play, like, board games and card games and stuff, right? You're like a social being. You're human, aren't you?
With social? No.
Here, catch. Oh,
of
you just played
not.
Catch.
Oh, God.
Maybe
that's a horrible joke.
I really should have thrown something at you. That would have been funny.
That would have been great.
Oh, you don't play games.
You actually threw your pen at me.
You can have it back?
Yeah.
No.
No way. I'm not giving it back to you. But yeah, anyway, so that, you know what that means?
What?
Is 200,000 more people download this than 10% of the world's population. No, that's a jump because I've downloaded Angry Birds multiple times.
We did enough math today. Let's do this. You're saying that half a billion people, 500 million people have actually downloaded this game.
No, I just realized I'm not saying that because I have three applications on my phone.
I know what you mean.
That are Angry Birds. And I also downloaded it on Google Chrome.
But still, it's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people.
Let's say everybody plays that game for at least an hour.
Okay.
That's a lot of wasted time, right?
Really a lot of wasted time.
How many hours do you play on that game?
Me? Mm. I don't know, actually. Anyway, but it turns out there have been 200,000 years of Angry Birds has been played. 200,000 years of Angry Birds.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and every single day, 300 million minutes.
Wow. See, this brings up the whole being a consumer, being a creator. What if all those hours have been made just doodling, doing anything, writing poetry, whatever? Wouldn't that be a better world?
Creating art? It's 2011.
And what I mean is, like, anybody can do that, right? Anybody can go ahead and take up a pen and start doodling. Anybody can go ahead and start writing as long as they understand, language. Yeah. There's a lot of creativity out there, and we see a lot of consumerism. It seems to me that let's stop doing this. Let's start doing more creative things.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with you, especially given that 266 billion of levels of Angry Birds have been played and 400 billion
If you haven't played Angry Birds, don't.
Have been
launched.
All right,
we're moving on.
It's these numbers are phenomenal. Yeah. It's like when you get to Facebook scale, it's just beyond all human comprehension.
Wait,
you know?
Facebook numbers scale is that new number?
No, the numbers are not that big. The numbers aren't that big.
Well, what's a big number then?
A big number would be something that's observed by the Fermi Space Telescope.
Oh,
recently.
Okay, yeah.
They were looking at a star cluster of about 100,000 stars. Okay. Which is known as the globular cluster NGC 6624.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
They were able to detect
gamma ray emissions from this star cluster, which isn't all that unusual. And these emissions were coming out to be something like 2 × 10^12 megatons of energy every second.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that would be a lot. And so they were wondering, like, oh, let's take a look at it and see what's going on. But they noticed something really odd, which was all of that energy was blinking on and off. They were looking for a bunch of different pulsars, but it turns out that was coming from one pulsar. As soon as that pulsar turned away from us, it basically went more or less silent.
So a pulsar is a orbiting
neutron star.
Neutron star.
Spinning.
So spinning?
Spinning, yeah. Yeah, sorry, yeah.
Spinning, right. And it's... And in its path, its beam of ejection happens to pass us, so we see the energy output.
Think of it like a spotlight, but going out both ways and spinning.
Right. Well, and not on its axis, but
let's put it this way. Well, it's pretty close to the axis.
Mm-hmm. If it's spinning on its axis, we wouldn't see a flash. Perfectly on its axis.
Oh.
It has to spin such a way that the beam hits us and stops hitting us.
Yeah.
Moving on.
So if
you take a flashlight and you throw it up in the air.
Right.
And you let it spin around.
Right.
And you see a flash.
As long as the flashlight is in the same orientation as you.
Right.
Otherwise, you wouldn't really see much.
Right.
Right.
And if you do that, make sure you catch it, unlike Ben.
Do you have a flashlight?
Flashlights, just not pens.
So
yeah, exactly.
They matched this huge amount of gamma ray radiation to a single pulsar. And... give you an idea of how much energy this is. The Earth's magnetic field comes out to be less than one gauss. We're putting out a unit of measurement there. You know, is less than one gauss. By comparison, this pulsar, this neutron star, has a magnetic, its magnetic field has a value of over 10^9 gauss.
Yeah.
Wow. That's huge.
Yeah, that would be 1 billion gauss, as opposed to Earth's magnetic field, which, you know, powers compasses, mm-hmm. Keeps solar radiation off of our planet to a large extent, you know, a lot of cosmic rays. And that's less than one. And this is over a billion.
So if one...
The energy you're talking about, was that in joules earlier? The amount of... you said 2 trillion megajoules?
Megatons of energy.
Megaton of joules? I mean, I'm trying to think of an energy measure. You don't say ton of energy. You say, nah. What?
Well,
it's a little more than an uber ton. Okay.
It is a measurement that you would use for example, gamma ray emission. Like the emissions you would get from the energy emission from a nuclear weapon would be, you know, half a megaton or something like that.
Okay. So in that kind of sense. Gotcha. So two trillion megatons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Per. Yeah.
Okay, per
that's
second.
A lot, per second. That's a lot of energy.
Yeah.
All right. What's the
To give it also, this is similar. This is like the scale of like every second it's giving out more radiation than probably the Earth will. The sun will over its lifetime. That type of thing.
Right. That's impressive. What object saw this?
What objects?
What telescope?
Oh, the Fermi Space Telescope.
Cool. Very cool.
I love that one.
You do?
I do. It has a fan.
I prefer the Hubble.
I love the Hubble too. They're not mutually exclusive, I'd say.
And it makes and you don't really, because usually neutron stars or always neutron stars will slow down over time. You don't have something quite as energetic, or you don't have that much energy, and you don't have it spinning quite as fast.
Right.
This pulsar has to be very young, and so this actually makes it both
because it's spinning fast.
Because it has this much energy and it's spinning fast.
Very
yes.
Cool.
It makes it both the youngest and the most energetic pulsar that we have yet detected.
Wow. Cool. Thank you. Ben, one more story, sir?
Story or the little puzzler?
You know what? We were going to do a puzzler.
Middle break.
We?
Yeah. Or we can do a puzzler and then we can reveal the answer.
Let's start by saying that we'll be doing a puzzler in a minute. Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Dr. Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in handcrafted dentistry from start to finish using digital technology for less radiation, offering one appointment crowns and veneers. Information at 423-2447. One of the people you don't hear every week, and you definitely don't hear today, is Rick Philman. He's not here, and therefore we're not taking calls. But you can, of course, comment on our shows up at geekspeak.org. You can send us email whenever you'd like. And all the information we talk about up on the show is at geekspeak.org. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have Katie Dutcher, Ben Jaffe, and Miles Elam. We are not taking your calls, but we will go on to more news in just a moment. Miles, you're first on the Geek Bit.
Okay, so music and math have always had a long history together. For example, IBM's first programmers were either mathematicians or musicians. Mm-hmm. Just the musicians, their minds work well. So it's not surprising when someone says, well, they're trying to make music, you know, that's mathematically sound, mm-hmm. that someone would try to go the opposite direction and try to make the world's ugliest piece of music, music that is devoid of any pattern.
Okay. Do you have a sample?
Yes, I do.
Please.
And this is done by a gentleman named Scott Rickard from, and he was presenting this at TED. And we'll be putting the link up. So if you want to listen to the world's ugliest piece of music as well later, you can do so.
Because once on the show won't be enough.
That's once right. on the show will not be enough. Now, there actually is a fair amount of math and science behind creating the piece of music, and I highly recommend checking out that TED Talk to find out more about it.
And it's up at geekspeak.org.
And it will be up at
geekspeak.org. Keep playing that. KOSP co-sponsors the Central Coast Independent School Fair, where parents, grandparents, and children can meet with representatives from Monterey Bay Area private schools, serving students in pre-K through 12th grade. 6:30 p.m., November 8th at Temple Bethel in Aptos. Information is at Independent School Fair. com. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. I want to mention also that GeekSpeak is a Creative Commons endeavor, share and share alike. And everything we play on GeekSpeak, everything we do on GeekSpeak can be reshared and reused, except for, of course, this music, which we don't own. But it's so ugly, no one wants to use it. I think it's great. I think it's normal.
This actually
wonderful.
Reminds me of a little tidbit. One of the senior technicians behind Crayola crayons for making the colors and
yes.
making the crayons. He recently passed away.
Oh.
And actually, he was colorblind. Oh, I'm sorry. He didn't pass away. I'm sorry. He just retired. 37-year career announced that he was colorblind.
That's fantastic.
Wow.
So was he a chemist?
I actually don't know his background.
The reason why there's such descriptive color descriptions is he didn't know what the colors were. He had to have good names on them.
He needed people to tell them.
Well, on the contrary, one thing that's very interesting that you may not know is that color blindness also correlates many times to a higher sensitivity to brightness and contrast.
Oh, makes sense. You have to compensate for the world not having as much color information, so you use grayscale information.
So while some people may be able to see, and you could find, you know, anyone can see between, you know, red and burnt umber, but he could also look at and see the difference in contrast, the difference in brightness between them, and be able to add in, you know, put in some commentary about whether or not this is the correct color or not.
Interesting. Now,
was he completely colorblind, or just like red, green, or?
No, it's probably just red, green colorblind.
Can you say that in crayon color? Lipstick red
deep
and
sunset.
Deep sunset
see.
Red, okay.
Yeah.
And Everest.
Elm, forest elm.
Emerald. Yeah. Oh, nice. Green.
So really, we're all really bad at color.
I think it's a little bit indicative of, number one, the state of the world, and number two, who I hang out with, that I know several people who would have loved that piece of music.
I like that piece of music. And, of course, I'm not a musician. I think it's also funny that the better programmers in the room, no offense, Ben, don't know how to play music.
Aww.
Ben here is an excellent musician. Excellent.
I'm kind of aching for something like Oingo Boingo after that, or, you know, something very tonal.
All right. Good. Can I have my cable back? Let's go ahead and go down the new other news source. Oh, wait. We should do a quiz, right?
I do have a quiz, but I also have a really relevant news article to the whole music thing.
Well, please do then.
I think I'll do the news article, and we might be able to get to the quiz now, and maybe not. But it's actually about audio as well, since we were talking about basically atonal music, although we didn't call it that. You know, that's very much what it is, music devoid of pattern and devoid of I guess, typical melody. Well, some researchers for the University for Media Communication in Cologne, Germany, and also someone for the University of Vienna, were doing all of these experiments on fingernails on a chalkboard, right? And things like that. Or like the sounds of squeaking styrofoam or balloons, or, you know, all those sounds that...
We are not going to play these sounds right now.
That every yeah, here, let me play you a musical musical composition with all the... No, I'm kidding. that would actually be horrible. But
someone's
it turns
done
you think
someone's done it. I know they have.
Actually, fingernails on a chalkboard do not bother me. So,
what did their study conclude with?
Well, they were just trying to figure out why they're so horrible.
Yeah,
and it turns out that there are actually two things. First of all, there are certain frequencies in it, right? They found that the frequencies that are responsible for making a sound unpleasant, according to this article, are from 150 to 7,000 hertz, which is a huge range. But yeah, the most offensive ones were between 2 and 4K, so 2,000 and 4,000 kilohertz.
That high-pitched sound.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of high-pitched sounds and whatever, and also if you have interference patterns that make dissonant sounds or whatever, then that could be bad. But it turns out that the things that were most abhorrent to people about these sounds were actually the pitch section of it, not necessarily the scratching or scraping, but the actual
you're talking not the tonal quality of it, not the instrument quality of it, but just the actual frequency,
the actual pitches.
I'm getting goosebumps just remembering.
I know.
I'm sitting here shuddering.
But so what the study is like, let's say all these sounds that sound horrible, okay, why do these sound so horrible to human ears? Well, they're all the same frequency. Ah, we solved it.
Well,
no, why is that frequency problematic for us? Why do
it's
we
not
frequency?
That frequency, because human speech falls right there.
Then
and I mean,
it?
I personally find human speech very painful, but most people don't.
Hopefully people that aren't listening to Geek Speak.
It's very interesting that you work in radio.
Yeah.
Ben. Yeah, you're right. work in radio?
Quote work.
Yeah. Volunteer.
Yeah, whatever. I get paid twice as much as Ben does.
Which is zero. Good job, Miles. I'm waiting for that promotion.
But not as much as Lyle. Bastard.
Well, not as much as, I don't know. Can you compare zero to zero?
He's making five times as much as I am.
Well, you can say that.
Moving on.
Anyway, but continuing on, it's not just so it's not just the frequencies. It's the way the frequencies interact with each other, right? You can hear a trumpet and a clarinet and a kazoo and a piano, and they all sound different because of the timbre of the instruments, right? Mm-hmm. The interference patterns and everything that operate within that you can't necessarily put your finger on as notes necessarily, but your ear hears differently. So there's that. But then the other thing is, it turns out that these frequencies that are so abhorrent a lot of it is just in your brain. I mean, you guys are sitting here remembering what it sounds like and shivering. That's your brain doing it. That's not any frequencies. And it turns out what they did was they took out the abhorrent frequencies from the actual sound, and then they played them back for people. And some people, they said, these are musical notes from a piece. And some people say they said these are the abhorrent frequencies from fingernails on a chalkboard. And they found that the people who knew what it actually was were freaked out a lot more, you know, than the people.
So they just took out the timbre, made just a tone or a couple tones that were similar to the scratch of the chalkboard.
What they probably did is they probably just ran a high pass on a low pass filter and just pulled out the very specific frequencies.
Yeah. And the people said that's from music or that's from a screeching chalkboard. And the people that heard a screeching chalkboard sound still had the same effect.
Researchers made that distinction. Uh-huh. So it was kind of a blinded study where they told one group, this is from music, and one group, this is from fingernails on a chalkboard. And the people who knew it was from fingernails on a chalkboard were the ones who react more to the sound, more negatively to the sound. And, they weren't just... That doesn't mean anything. But they... What do you mean?
Well, if I said, hey, I've got a recording. Bah. And I said, okay, that recording was from my child, or that my recording was from Hitler. Which one do you like? You would definitely answer differently. It's like a stupid thing to say. Unless it was saying, they said, you know, rate...
I have to make the assumption that they probably controlled this relatively well.
Yeah.
I don't know every detail about the study, but I think from reading the article, it seems like it was done relatively well, not to mention some of the other things they were talking about, like as far as the frequencies and whatnot. So even if that portion of the study were completely useless, which I'm sure it is not at all.
Well, the thing is, that's great about studies. Still like something science in general has these interesting studies, right? That you might only get a little tiny, tiny bit of data out of it. But because we do so much science, we slowly increase our basic knowledge. That's wonderful.
Yeah. And they also were doing things like measuring the skin connectivity of people and stuff. So, like what they do for polygraphs, but not saying, oh, we're detecting lying, saying we're detecting anxiety and stress, because that's actually what these things are measuring. Yeah, because the polygraph doesn't work.
Which means you stress yourself out before, you know, as you're doing the diagnostic, and then later on you...
Well, yeah, it doesn't measure lying, it measures stress.
Right.
So
exactly.
You hook up someone to a polygraph and you're saying, we're going to see if you're lying, and they're not going to be freaked out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think so. Yeah, so inadmissible in court. Sorry, CSI.
I have promised for so long that we would be doing a quiz.
Oh.
We'll be doing that in just a second. But first, Miles, your next news.
Go, Miles.
Okay, with that. Some French scientists were able to restore the youth of 100-year-old cells.
What does that mean?
Well, if any of you remember the clone sheep, Dolly,
back in
the day.
I love Dolly.
They took a, I believe it was a stomach cell, actually, cloned it and did some fancy science stuff to make it put it back into a quiescent state. In other words, make it a stem cell again.
Right.
Specifically,
they didn't take that cell from Dolly.
Right. They took it from
some other sheep. I don't know the name of.
Right.
Poor victim.
And then used nuclear transfer to transfer that genetic material into the egg of another sheep. Right. And then implanted that egg into a third sheep. So that it was clear that when the sheep came out, like it was no question, this is the original sheep, because they were all different varieties. But Dolly had a problem, which was she aged prematurely,
mm-hmm.
And actually died prematurely from age-related diseases, even though she was very young in terms of her own lifetime.
But her own lifetime happened to be a sum of her cells.
The shortening of telomeres. Yeah.
Right.
But these French scientists have actually taken a cell. This is not the fountain of youth yet, but they have taken some cells, and they've made them back, converted them, these adult stem cells, back into have the characteristics of embryonic stem cells, but also have made them so that they are reprogrammed to be like those embryonic stem cells. In other words, at the beginning of their life cycle, rather than in the middle or near the end.
The aglets of the chromosome, what is that called? Or the gene, what's that called?
The
tumor? What are they?
Oh, telomere.
So that's the end of the shoelace, the aglets part of the...
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens when you, one of the side effects of aging is a cell is that thing, that little bit, every time that the cell, the genome reproduces itself, that thing gets shorter and shorter. Mm-hmm. Imagine your shoelace, you're cutting off the end. And at some point, the cell just can't maintain integrity because it doesn't have the
access anymore. Or it doesn't, and you have cancer.
Right. So they were able to take the cells that had shorter aglet, what do they call it?
Telomeres.
It took me so long to remember the term aglet that I now want to use that every time I talk to individuals. Telomeres. They were able to just add this and regrow that?
I don't know the specifics of it.
That's really cool, though. Amazing. But yeah, the good point is that...
We should have done this story when Dr. Dunn was still in the office.
The point about this, though, of course, is that, yeah, having cells that don't die, there's bad things called cancer that...
I don't know if they don't die. I think what they're doing, actually, is they're resetting the clock, as it were. Mm-hmm. So I guess if you could reset the clock indefinitely, yes, they wouldn't ever die. But, and there are cells out there that don't die, the HeLa cells that mm-hmm. Anyone who studied biology is familiar with, the biology cells taken from a woman.
But that was from a cancer.
Oh, okay.
That was cancer cells that was biopsied.
Right.
We're talking about the cells that most human genetic testing has been done on for, I don't know, 50 years. Neat documentary about that, I think. Let's go on to the quiz, shall we? Ben.
Okay, so something really strange happened to me, and when I finally solved this problem...
This better be leading to a quiz.
When I finally solved this problem, I thought this would be an awesome Geek Speak quiz, you know? Like thinking about the car guys and the puzzler and whatever. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so here's what happened. So... I have a pretty cool car because I added a bunch of stuff to it for my cell phone. So, you know, I've got like a cell phone holder made of gaffer's tape. I've got the cigarette lighter adapter that charges the phone and everything that I can plug in, take out. And then I also have this box, actually, and I went up to your office to solder this box together. Mm-hmm. And what it does is the audio from the phone goes into this box. And then it goes through this switch. I'm oversimplifying a little. It goes through the switch, and you can flip the switch one way or the other. And then it goes into the car, right? So it goes to the car stereo. If you flip the switch one way, it's just normal. If you flip the switch the other way, it disconnects the ground, which effectively removes the vocals. It removes whatever is the same in the left and the right, right?
Well, you're effectively doing a... inverse of one of the channels. You're,
exactly.
You're taking a subtraction of the two channels.
Yeah, so anything that's the same between the left and the right channel, that gets canceled out. And all the things that are the same between the left and the right channel tend to be things like the kick drum and the vocals and the bass. So this thing was working really well. I actually didn't solder all of it together. Some of it I used alligator clips inside before I closed up the box. Right?
So you could show people.
So I could show people, and I could disconnect it, I could reconnect it and everything. So I was driving the other day, and the box just mysteriously wasn't working. And so I was like, this is really strange. I'm driving, obviously, I'm not going to unscrew
this. No, it's not strange. You had alligator clips in it. But go on.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like something disconnected. So I got to open up the box and, you know, reconnect the alligator clips and everything. So anyway, I finished driving all this stuff and whatever. And then, like, the next time I was in my car, I happened to remember. And I opened up the box. I made sure everything was connected. Everything was connected fine. Closed the box, and I tried it, and it was working at that point. Then this last time, it randomly stopped working again, and I couldn't figure out why. Like,
is this different audio sources? Is this always your phone?
This is always my phone.
Okay.
And the switch that took away the ground,
yeah,
that didn't seem to be working. So I'd flip it, which would disconnect the ground in the box, and
it would still work.
It would still work just fine.
But that's not exactly what your circuit did. One of the things was going on is you were playing music through... Weren't you...
Ignore the potentiometer.
Wait, is there a quiz
ignore
involved?
All
like,
stuff.
People are supposed to be...
Why? Yeah, the question is why, or troubleshoot this problem,
why was
right?
It sometimes working and sometimes not working?
Yeah.
Wait,
and
wait,
I,
wait, 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 hold on. We do tech support for the Central Coast. Now you want Central Coast to do tech support for us?
I already have the answer to it. You said it at the beginning. It's no big deal.
I did?
Yeah. So if you have the answer, call in. Oh, wait, you can't. Ha ha. anybody else in the air room? No? Katie, you got to figure out what's happening?
I'm just enjoying watching you guys exchange all of these looks.
Miles, you have no idea what he's talking about, right? You're not even sure why he's talking about this.
I've just been waiting for the quiz the whole time.
It's such a letdown. In 9 minutes, Click and Clack will be on, so we can ask them. of course, when you have your phone charging, you ground the phone.
And you remove the ground.
When you don't have it charging, you don't.
Exactly.
I don't know why your circuit is doing that, though, because that's not what your circuit was supposed to be doing. just releasing the ground doesn't seem to make sense. I'm not sure exactly. I got to look at your circuit again.
My circuit works. It works perfectly fine. Yeah. But it doesn't work. Yeah,
except when it doesn't work.
Yeah. Oh, come on now.
That's the answer,
yeah.
My spelling is perfect, except when I spell something wrong.
I mean, I could have given you that answer.
So yeah, Lyle got it right. The answer was right there in the beginning when I said I had a cigarette lighter adapter. It charges the phone. Sometimes it's plugged in, sometimes it's not. When it is plugged in, then you get ground from the car to the phone through that. And so you don't, regardless of whether or not you have a ground going into the headphone jack, you do have a ground coming from the same place, the car, because cars have to ground to a central point. They can't ground to some other random point or anything. You can't have isolated grounds on a car. It's just one enclosed system. Not really. Lyle's giving a look.
I need to look at your circuit to figure out what's going on. This is going to drive me crazy.
So you got
is
the
your car
answer.
Here?
Yeah.
Good.
So you got the answer, but you need to look at the circuit.
Well, because,
I think it was
because that's
tape.
Not how you do
gaffer's tape.
Even though that's the
miles
answer,
and miles of gaffer's tape.
Well, you should get the effect. I don't understand how you're getting the effect you're getting. So the general idea of saying, well, I want to listen to music without the center channel, which you like to do because you like to sing in your car.
Yeah.
So you want it to remove the vocals so Justin Bieber's not what you're hearing. You're just hearing the backup song.
Yeah. Why'd you tell the entire Central Coast of California?
So then you're able to just hear the music. And not the center channel. You can't hear the vocals. Then you become the star of your own car, which is awesome.
Well, no.
And the
then
way
I can
you do
hear,
that,
then I can hear how off
the way you
key
do that
I am,
is
and
you
I can make it better.
Okay, good. I like that.
It's self improvement. Okay. It's not narcissism.
Right. Ben, did you just say that you Rickroll yourself in your own car?
Yes, I listen to Rick Astley all the time. It's only that and What Is Love? What is love? Love, love. That song.
Don't hurt me.
Yeah, over and over again.
What is Rick's song sound like without him in it? Does it have good neutralization?
Good what? Neutralization?
So the point of it is that if you have the same signal coming from two different sound sources and you inverse them, so you subtract the sound signal together.
You inverse one of them.
You inverse one of them and you add them together. The sine waves that are exactly the same but inverse of each other will cancel each other out. That's a general idea. Mm-hmm. So you won't actually have any fluctuation of Justin Bieber's actual voice because it's on both and you've inverted it.
Assuming that he's mixed random.
You're doing a one-pole switch to do the inversion, which means you're not doing an inversion. Somehow,
I'm not doing an inversion.
No. So what you're doing is...
Good job.
So what you're doing is you normally...
The opinions expressed on KUSP are not necessarily those of KUSP or rational people who want to talk about this.
So wait, why if you have a balanced audio source, two balanced audio sources, and you... And at one end, you take the left and the right, and you take one point and you attach them together, which is the negative of both of them. Then the negative, and then you ground that. You now have a non-balanced audio source. Some people will understand what I'm saying. Even if you don't understand, Ben, some people will.
It's okay, Ben.
Hey, I did audio for a long time.
So you get the audio, the center tap grounded. Then you're going to get your left and right. If you lift that center point and listen to the two of them together, you still should get... You know, you'll get a sum. You shouldn't get an inversion. So somehow your switch has to do some kind of inversion. Unless the floating point of the ground is the reason. Your phone is a battery operated and therefore it's... Mm-hmm. But why would it be doing a subtraction?
Yep.
Welcome to Ben's last entire week.
So.
This is 5 minutes I'm never going to get back.
Yeah, who do I see about that, getting these minutes back? Is there anyone?
Oh, my God. People on both sides of me are...
You'll get a bonus on what you're being paid.
Miles, do you have awesome news story, or should we go...
A percentage.
It's a percentage, yeah.
Do you have an awesome news story, or should we go ahead and talk
yes,
about the discussion
I
want to talk about?
We've talked about the One Laptop Per Child project before, for many years, actually. Well, there's a new twist going on about it. One, they're designing a tablet. Two, it's powered by a solar-powered battery built into the back of it. And although they're still going to have the ability to have a hand crank and be charging it by USB, they are water-resistant, and they are quite durable. And most telling about this story is that they can be dropped from 30 feet without breaking.
Nice.
So that's their plan. They're going to make tablet airdrops to remote areas for the kids to collect. And
how big are these things? Are they still kid-sized?
Yeah, they're still kid-sized. I mean,
the one laptop per child idea is that the digital divide is pretty severe. People that don't have as much money normally don't have computers. You can't really participate in the world economy without having a base of people that understand computers and can type and do all those things. And so the idea of the one laptop per child is to get more laptops out. It's easy to get. Instead of getting a whole bunch of books and delivering them, you deliver a laptop, you produce networks, and you have free flow of information. And there's been a pretty good successful project, I think, on getting these laptops to remote locations and having people be wired all of a sudden, which is cool, or non-wired. And the new ones are going to be tablet-based.
Mm-hmm.
So no more typing.
Yeah, and to give you an idea of how well these are made.
Yeah. 30 feet, that's good enough, man.
Well,
that's pretty impressive.
The original one laptop per child, which came out five years ago, something like that. The group had distributed 5,000 laptops in Ethiopia. A year later, two of them broke or were lost.
Whoa. They are really durable.
Out of how many is this?
5,000.
Wow.
Quick, someone do the math.
That's 5,000.
We just need a mathematician today, don't we?
Really?
We really do.
Right. They are, the children love them, and their families also like them because the screens tend to be the brightest light source in their home.
Wow.
Preserving the past, building for the future is a theme for a 26th annual Harvest Dinner produced by the Agricultural History Project to be held Saturday, November 12th in the CrossFit Building at the Santa Cruz County Fairgrounds on Highway 152, 4 miles east of Watsonville. The Harvest Dinner will feature a buffet dinner prepared by Monterey Bay caterers, live and silent auctions, and exhibits showing the timeline of inventions from 1850 to 1970. Information and reservations are at 724-5898. Geek Speak on KSP is supported by Cruise IO Internet, offering commuters quiet drop-in office space with a 10 gigabit fiber internet connection at 877 Cedar Street in downtown Santa Cruz. Information is at cruiseio.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kusp.org. You did ask for some music, didn't you, Ben? Do I need to take out the center channel so you can sing?
You know, I was thinking that. That'd be kind of cool.
Or one of them.
For KUSP and for Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxell. We'll see you next week. The Geeks Today were Katie, Ben, and Miles. We have one more minute.
Hey, I was about to say, like, I thought you were doing that a little bit early.
I love it. I was looking at the clock. It's like, yes, come up on the minute.
Oh. Well, on the bright side,
yes.
I get to tell you that we have...
Should I keep it boingo?
Seemed like directly imaged the disc around a black hole.
Oh, very cool.
As
yeah.
As
just
burning it. The event horizon. What's the radiation that actually gives off light around a black hole?
The accretion disc. Radiation.
Okay. Oh, yeah. The accretion disc.
The accretion disc.
Oh, okay.
And they did it with gravitational lensing.
Yep.
And that's how they got a magnification.
There was a very large quasar behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Think
in front
of a pulsar,
of it.
But based upon an entire galaxy. That's what a quasar is. And they saw two images of that quasar because the light was being bent on either side of that black hole.
Behind it, yeah.
Very cool.